actually the first time I've ever heard anybody else do any of my words. That happened later on. I actually had this idea at one point. I don't know if anybody's been interested, but I just kind of wanted to get a group of folks together up in Denver to kind of like do each other's stuff, because I love so many of the words that friends of mine do. Sometimes you just want to try them out on your own tongue. So I don't know. How do you say this? Yeah, it always makes me so nervous. Funny, because I have a daughter. She's 18, and she's an old soul. She knows everything. And I've had people tell me on the streets from when she's really small, she's an old soul. I'm like, I know, she's been here before. She knows more than I do. For me, every time I step up to the mic, it's almost like the first time I'm that new. It's like being newborn. Consequently, I do a lot of stuff about reincarnation, death, other reasons for that. Wanted to start off with a piece about definitions, because it's something I get defined a lot in the States. You know, the United States is big on pigeonholing. I don't know if it's the same here. I've only been here for 3 years. But one thing I found when I moved here was people defining me as American, and sort of a lot of a negative vibe around that. As a result, finally I just had to write a piece about it just to say that, you know something, I know they're evil bastards, they are, and the same people screwing you over are screwing my people over back home, so I just had to do this to, it sounds a little mean, but I had to do it to kind of make sure that people know who we were talking about. It's called Ugly American. When you say Ugly American, knowing only the face on dollar bills, they say George Washington had wooden teeth, that you could hear them rattling in the splintered ideology, whittled down declarations of equality and petrified truth. Any sojourner could have told you that when they rang in freedom, well, some free, some struck dumb. Know who you mean when you say ugly American, like I was branded a pervis unum. Well, I am one of many, but not one of the guilty, see? A black face still won't buy me, but a greenback will, and whoever cashed in on black skin didn't give me my cut. Guess they figured the first was deep enough to leave me questioning what the metaphor could be for before I realized the sharpness of tongues left me bleeding sure as the whip. You say ugly American, seeing the whip come down. Not seeing it beating its own reflection. Not knowing some survived despite unnatural selection. I'll make it clearer, it's done with mirrors these national elections, but I never spy my kind. See, there is no stepping through the looking glass to a place where they cannot get at you. Only a kiss to let me understand that I stand in disgrace. The clock holds its hands to its face, not out of shame that time could have stood still while people just stood by, but only dispassionately marks the passing of another year of living dangerously. You say ugly American, not knowing it's already half past too late for the half-blood, octoroon, high yellow, step-infected, and dip coon. Bigger Thomas with an even bigger complex. Never mind the whitewash. Niggas can't even paint themselves with the same brush dipped in the blood of our ancestors. And you figure to paint me red, white, and blue by numbers that don't add up? Do the math. Make your moral accounting accountable to history and understand that Uncle Sam's cash flows from a filthy source unremorseful. He sells me fire water to dull my edge, tells me it's water under the bridge. But the blade cuts both ways. If we handed down the bottle when master was dry and lit torches and came to it while he stepped off his drunk. Yeah. And since Nat Turner burned it down, the ashes of Uncle Tom's cabin still blow across that land. They're blown across oceans. The soot is used to blacken the faces of Japanese b-boys who shout out nigger please and little red-headed Colleens who sing about bling bling but refrain, still don't refrain from saying ugly American. And if my attitude don't suit you, try my shoes on for size. Try my ridicule, my rope. They gave me more than enough to hang myself when they had me halfway believing that I don't mean a thing if I ain't got that swing, strange fruit, southern trees, death shroud, striptease, naked truth. Said if my attitude don't suit you, try my flag. The simple-minded may find it more to their liking. A fashion statement suits the blind prejudice. You wear it well when you say ugly American. Or say, can you see? It's made you even uglier than it ever made me.
That was rough. I get so nervous.
they used to have carnivals, big carnivals where you find the freak shows, you know, the midgets. I have a fascination with midgets. I just always had a thing for them. So ostensibly, this is about those carnivals, and always on the midway is where you find the freak shows. So it's called Midway. But more importantly, at 42, I kind of find that I never really expected this to happen. It's a little background. When I was in my 20s, my sister died. She was about 11 months younger than me. And since then, it just really gave me a sense of my own mortality. And as you get older, I really do find you just start thinking, wow, this carnival is falling down. You know? It's all going to end someday, you know? I don't know. It's just about realizing that. This was the conceit of our youth. A Barker's testifying from sideshow pulpits, riling the heat under illustrated eaves, lustrous leaves, exalting summer spectacle, and the earnest part taken in our own deceit. White, dewy mouths of lilies, futilely gilded, fretful bulbs hoisted in urgency. The lowness and guile of repose and the day's eye blindsided, following the sun and kissing her hands like white petals I have never known so well. Beckoning to transient abodes, the drone in the midway, the same on the meadow. They're carried away in passing our ages, shape and shade, and moving on laden with our dust, thus scattered over fertile years along unfollowable paths, guaranteed the sanctity of vanity, of bonfires at the short ends of days, with this moment's despair, this moment's hesitation. Why does the bee suck from the flower, if not for the flower's pleasure too? When too soon it comes and with turning leaves, skeletal rods lying down, teeth cranking, dervish facets release their holds. The rush of a calliope slowed in the humid air and the breathless blur of a carousel coalesced into paler faces, awake and left behind by revelry. Bulleting through funhouse mirrors one last time, a regret moving faster than in diminishing days with no sleep, only re-sleep. Every birth and transition along the high wire entered irrefutably from end to end, tense, finite, and done. But in later hours, on longer nights, smoke, the tally, and shares. Fire eaters who shoot hooch. Fortune tellers divine the mundane from daily papers, and rubbermen buy liniment, stretch limbs into withering reason. Blossoms, pavilions collapse, leave no debt to past residents. Okay. I actually have a playlist this time. It's the first time I've had a playlist.
Kind of like different category now.
I come from a very political background, and I do wonder a lot of times about that point at which we're pushed to violence, that point at which we've been pushed too far and we have to react by violent means, because I have to admit I'm not particularly a pacifist. I do believe that there are times when people need to stand up and take arms, but that we also need to understand when those times are. So this is a really short one. It's Taylor. It's called the Taylor. It's a fable. Where the seams split, be pins and needles stood on end, poised to stitch flag and shadow into vestments for naked face. Pockets, fill them with posies. Embroider belief with rhetoric, but the shroud of your days will be plain. A petrol-drenched tongue tucked on a bottle and let fly without a word. Cutting a black and furious swath over our heads and redressing all. The emperor in his new clothes and the shirt stripped from our backs. I don't know what made me write this next one. For some reason I was thinking about taxi dances. I don't know if they had them here, but back in the 40s in the States, you have places like the Savoy in New York where guys could go to dance with women, or ostensibly dance with women. It's sort of a front for prostitution most of the time. And I just wrote this one thinking about one of the ladies that just been pushed too far. I have no idea where this came from. It's called Steve Time of the Savoy.
last one left with a smile. Right under his chin. The last one went to haul her violently from her seat, and she said, yeah, remember the last time hell froze over? See, the penny had dropped at a dime a dance, and suddenly, banker, senator, soldier with animal faces, she saw them clearly howl, crying foul to her rebuke. A philanthropist, a misanthropist, that one, the canthropist, their currency rank intimacy, a courtship measured in tickets, accused of nitpicking. Was it the cologne, the breath, the groping? She said no, but if he had a human head, I would slow dance with him cheek to cheek all night long. People call me a slam poet before. Buddy Wakefield, when he was up in Dublin, he was down here, wasn't he? He was up in Dublin, he said something interesting about slam. He said slam was really only a gimmick to get people interested in poetry. So that was great, because not really a slam poet. I think I'm more of a nature poet. Do a lot of stuff about the conflict between nature and these systems we live in. I hate cities. I really do like living in them because I have to do business in them. The birds don't care much for your poetry, really, so. God bless you. I'll just jump into this. This one is I used to do a lot of wandering through the woods back home. And every once in a while you get stuck in these cities and just sort of feel like everything's moving too fast, but it's not true. What's happening is that we are made to believe that things are being sped up. We are sold things in advertisements for people on the go. Everything is instant credit, get it now. And when you step out to the woods, suddenly you realize it's not moving that fast. It's not moving that fast. Actually, the world is not changing rapidly. But to bodies industrialized, to ends accelerated, the fundamental business of loam and fervidity in pulling us into it and turning us over and over is slower even than traffic lights. We become impatient. We hit the ground running. Gravity is a silent, heady prayer that roots us to the temple where the soles of our feet congregate, sometimes joined by the full length of our bodies laid down and testifying in a choir of leaves. I wonder sometimes what happened to nomadic people. They're disappearing. Nobody wanders anymore. I just bought a house and I'm thinking about it a bit more these days. I still do a bit of traveling, but it's weird to just have a permanent home, some place where you can just say, I'm giving up the rental on this and just take it off, you know? If we are lucky, we will pull our bodies in time from the wreckage of architecture. Moving cities collide. Moving people meet. We will go without windows to press our longing faces against, or walls to hang empty devotions from. Homes go rushing blind, empty of compassion, full of life and belongings, only the burdens of comfort, only the sounds of passing feet. Somewhere along the same lines is, I have a playlist and I still want to try. I'm going to do that first. I'll just jump into this. It's about reincarnation. More or less about, I don't believe that we get reincarnated like we die and you come back. I'm not sure. I hope so. So I'm definitely afraid of dying at this point. I hope I'll be ready for it when it comes. But more about that, just that kind of reincarnation that we have to do on a daily basis. We live in systems that grind us down so much, and I feel like we just have to reincarnate every day. We have to be reborn every day. It's called pomegranate. It's actually named after, supposedly the fruit on the tree of knowledge. Is that science? Or Scientology?
Nothing sown, no harvest. Nothing reaped. My stars. Disconnected from the earth, yet resurrected from the dearth of such grounded company, I will return to you all. Not beyond the pale, but in its midst, I dug this furrow through anxious flesh. A long season of amnesia, all recollections threshed, reincarnations crushed, perpetually swallowed, cuddled, spirits distilled, senses followed. The fashionable doubt outdated while I waited for next year's model, when truth expression is cultivated, clear as thought ruminated, for do we not chew before we swallow? Of course. We try following the slow and dedicated horse that pulls its plow through a Sunday painter's pastorals, printed floral patterns of half-eaten lotus, their scent recalled in scratch and sniff and aerosol, and rendered artlessly. More alcohol than alchemy. Stuck in this rut with lot of too many slender things, and pushing to paint its spring, tearing red the blood that drained from beauty in the magazines. All dressed for burial. For life more mechanical than mercurial, yet believing in goods minus needs, fruit minus seeds. The immaculate abortion of our innocence, in a sense, although it remains intact in the condescending backstop. Good man, job well done. In Babylon? Yeah. Little elbow grease, brown nose to the grindstone, and then one day you too can own a mobile home, and go where even buffalo no longer roam. See what's left of your country but propane and cable hookup. The sacred and profane say, sky is failing, don't look up. I find nothing safe in its place, and in their haste they made a wasteland. But a raven fed Elijah in the desert on a hard bath and a tender trap delicacy. See, I have been leaner, wallet to gullet, have lived on less nourishment, never heaven sent, and been saving on tasteless sacraments, have kept only effigies of ecstasy, parodies of rapture, captured and held the frenetic grace of my hand shaking closer to my heart than belly to the ground. Found more than one snake in this garden, asking, what more then? This brain of truth stored not by stiff little fingers, but by burnished palms calling us to rise, to work that heals, indeed composing the music of killing fields. With a spade, the plain and worthy side played black as my name, and its might remains my rudiment. In resilience, I will learn yet to feed myself. Between this garden's hardened lines indelible, will meditate, pull down and hold tight the blood hide of labored fruits inedible, anticipate the taste and the passionate intent to seek what becomes evident. And I split the pit to spill with a thousand flashing teeth. Long time ago in America, we used to, this was when European settlers were moving west in a great expansion known as Manifest Destiny. How arrogant was that, huh? But on top of that, in trains moving out west, they used to shoot buffalo just for sport, not for food or anything. Just for clothing, it's a damn shame. I love those animals. Has anybody ever seen a buffalo?
Yeah.
That's an incredible thing. They just radiate or something. A buffalo shoot. She's a social animal. They brave it in the plains and listens and knows what you would never guess. Their breath is not mute. Even when uprooted and chewed to a pulp, its dialogue with her is plaintive, asking, how old is the world? Which is only this plain, this spot in her shade. This single blade pulled from this life. We are all lifted in succession with the same lack of concern and the same love. We never know she is gone, even when crushed by her weight. A bullet from a passing train is not in our vocabulary of life that bends and submits and wakes up after storms have walked through and still thrives. She could be sleeping for all we know. Don't go to Las Vegas. Just telling you now. Has anybody been there?
Yeah.
Scary place. It is.
You know
it's
even scarier.
Huh?
You know it's even scarier.
I actually kind of like Reno. I've been married twice, and the first time I got married in Reno. The wonderful thing about Reno, actually, is that Reno is kind of, for those of you who don't know, Reno is like mini Las Vegas. It's sort of like, basically, it's like Las Vegas Junior, but even better than that, it's like, what if a circus caravan and a freight train crashed in the middle of the desert and they built a city for what they had left? It's great. Las Vegas, on the other hand, I think I can deal with Reno because it's a little bit smaller. It is a little bit scarier. But Las Vegas has got that kind of scariness where it is, again, it's out in the middle of the desert and it's huge, and when you're there, you can't see the stars. The lights are so bright, you can't see the stars. I know it's a physical problem in cities in general, but particularly in Las Vegas, it just obliterates everything. And I just think about this thing sitting in the middle of the desert, humming and glowing like that, and just its effect on everything around it. I've never actually stopped. I've driven through. It's been too scary to stop. It's just like from one end to the other, and you're out. This is called Las Vegas. It's another one about reincarnation, too, actually, strangely enough, about a coyote that used to be a dandelion. I was a dandelion clock once, spun in warm air, then buried briefly, alive briefly. Now I'm here, a coyote in the undertow of heat, and beyond me, a ripple on the horizon, a city of bells and whistles, wavers, nearly seen, radiates in the dark, whitewashed stars, and there's more of it under the ground. I hear it constantly, drove out the bats, the slowness of weddings in amber, the cactus flower, and that trash-talking snake, where did he go? Would be tasty right now. I don't give a damn how hungry I am. I'll never go near that thing. A scorpion, an automobile, the snake, the entropic, coiled, neon. Last time, I was eaten by a deer. That's how I learned to tell time, and it will go too. The Vegas recollection of a number up before the wheel. Again. These are my Nietzsche poems, by the way. They're all about animals. Got one more. Came off actually off of an interesting story. I don't make anything up. I don't know. There's one I made up. It's a little weird story about some city in Mexico. Another one I don't know where it came from. Too long to do in public.
I'm giving my ears everything.
Don't even touch me. Sensory deprivation for poetry. That's how I like to listen to poetry. Sensory deprivation tank at home. Water. Like a water bed. Water bed. I was out camping one time and someone told me this story about how rabbits are killed. I don't know if anybody else has heard this story, but they told me that hunters know that rabbits will travel in a circle from where you scare them up. So what a hunter will do is you scare up the rabbits and just wait there, and they'll come back around and you just blast them. That's insane. And I don't necessarily have a problem with hunting. I think that just the way meat is produced these days, it's out of balance with nature. I think that we've been meat eaters for a long time, and there's not really a problem with that. It's just a problem with there's just too many damn people, and everything's out of balance. But anyway, this one's by rabbits, that one's called The Ring. Talk about the moon, too, because when this person was telling me this, I was camping, and I don't know, it was lovely. I was sitting there, we were watching this full moon. You know that beautiful rainbow halo that goes around the moon? Love that. And it's just the two always stuck in my mind. So, there was a ring around the moon. Sure as its piercing eye, startling the rabbit in the hollow of your chest. Into the dark. Into 14 circles. And just as a blind death closes the loop, understood. But such eloquent and fearful circumscription is a luxury afforded only those who bear the burden of its secret. That the path round is known and all our meetings at such a short time. One more. Can I do one more? Yeah. And we start off with this one because I get so nervous. It's an invitation to the breath. Usually this reminds me to take a deep breath. It also reminds me that, I don't know, we spend a lot of work in poetry. We do, but at the end of the day, without actual breath, how the words may even just forget. So I like to do this invitation to the breath. And also, this is a reminder that, unlike the power that be, we have no secret agenda but the beating of our own hearts. No manifesto but the breath that we manifest. I found my orphan voice one day, living in the ruins of a house that collapsed years ago beneath the weight of what was unspoken. I spoke addiction like Pulp Fiction and gifted it the colloquial violence of a gun. I lifted grid scriptures from the street preacher's passions, the passion misspelled gospels from its own fears, while the illegible heart left the facts of its peers untranslated. The word got out. No manifesto but the breath. See, I just read the writing on the wall that said, a death without joy is a night without stars. And when at last I comprehended, I penned this on remnants of night between pinpoints of light. I misunderstood. People are not killed for what they say, but for its echoes. The roar of distant suns is unheard, yet years after their death are we aware of their presence when it is darkest. No manifesto but the breath, to even that goes. We have all misspoken. Testimonies confined to air are yet tethered to earthly prejudice. Word balloons are too leaden to fly and make cartoons of speechless reverence. We have all misspoken. And for it, our ends will be identical when the bottom drops out. All swinging our days away on the rope of this life. Our inexhaustible diatribes, our inexpressible disbelief choked between lips and lungs and lost forever. No manifesto for the breath, and even that goes. But tongues will plead for language as fire to that which fuels it, until all meaning is burned out, and nothing more can be said, and history cannot be recited nor repeated, until we are left standing in the ash of voices fallen from a feverish nation with its tongue in flames. The ash of voices, spiraling down in ever slower revolutions. To a day when we have waited in their remains long enough to recognize the virtuosity of their silence. To a day when every song martyred by mouth goes unsung at once, the harmonics of sympathetic strings and crossed wires fading at last to leave empty the contemplative air and luminous and sensitive.